From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Fairfax, California.
Glen Park.
Fillmore.
I'm from San Jose.
I'm from the Intermission.
UCCC World.
West Oakland.
East Oakland.
Coming up, an inside look at the devastating effects of the heroin trade in Africa.
There's no family who never been touched. There's no family never been touched with the drug addicts in Zanzibar.
We'll take you to the island of Zanzibar to find out how former addicts have created a network of support for each other.
People, they've been trying to help addicts in different ways, and most of them have failed. But this was a different project because it's addicts that are the one who own this project.
We're taking a trip all the way to Zanzibar to hear the story of success on the soccer field and life after addiction. Today on Cross Currents. In the last 20 years, the eastern African islands of Zanzibar have become a top destination for tourists. They come for the beautiful beaches, the food, the history, and the architecture. But in the last two decades, another economy has developed, the drug trade. Capitalizing on the island's strategic location on routes between Asia, Africa, and the Middle East, drug traffickers use the island as a transit point to get heroin from Asia to Europe. And with that trade, heroin addiction has become widespread. Now, Mahmoud Moussa, who works in the Health Ministry's Substance Abuse Division, says the problem is so massive that there is an addict in just about every family.
Either your niece or your nephew, your uncle, every family. So there's no family in Zanzibar, particularly in Stone Town, not being touched with this problem of substance abuse.
Government officials and others tried to find effective strategies to fight the epidemic of addiction, but the problem only grew. But in the last few years, addicts have taken it upon themselves to help get clean. They set up a system of sober houses, part rehab, part support group, and are showing the community that addicts can not only recover, but that they might be the best option for battling the addiction. Chris Connolly has our story.
Just after 8 in the morning, the Zanzibar sun is already baking the soccer field on the northern edge of Stone Town. The field isn't groomed, just uneven, patchy grass surrounded by mangroves. There are no white lines to contain the game. The rusted goalposts have no nets. Maybe they were stolen, or maybe they just fell apart. The game on the field is fast-paced. Some of the players are really skilled. It's hot, so everyone's sweating. But some of the guys are lagging more than others. We're 15 minutes into the first half, and already a handful of the starting players have rotated out, stripping off their sweaty jerseys and handing them to their replacements. Alternates for both teams watch the game from the shade, cheering, cajoling, but mostly hanging out. No one is surprised when the players need to switch out, because all of them, both teams, are recovering heroin addicts.
It's hard for someone in recovery to feel good because you're used to drugs to feel happy. So when you exercise, you reduce depression, and it's a part which helps you to feel good.
Suleiman Mali has been sober for longer than anyone on the field. As a youth team arrives to watch the game and wait for their turn to play, he's glad to have spectators.
We've realized that it's a way of fighting stigma because when we play our soccer, a lot of people are coming to watch the game. It's hard for them to imagine that people can quit drugs and play soccer. And not only play, we win.
Mali is part of the reason the guys are here. He helped organize the game, and he founded the recovery community that they are all now part of. The soccer players call themselves the Mwamko Recovery Team. Mwamko means awakening or rebirth in Swahili. A few years ago, Mali was helping to set up the first sober house program in Zanzibar, and he wanted the guys to have an outlet. He says it was tough at first. They didn't even have enough players to field a team. Now there are enough players to make up their own soccer league. It's not terribly formal. The games happen every few weeks or whenever someone gets around to challenging another team. But the fact that there are enough teams to even casually call it a league is testament to the growing community of heroin addicts who are helping each other to get sober and stay clean.
Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar.
Zanzibar, this Muslim nation and autonomous archipelago off the coast of Tanzania, draws tourists from around the world. They come for the natural beauty of white sand beaches and nature preserves, and for the rumpled charm of centuries-old buildings that reflect the island's mix of Arabic, Indian, European, and African heritage. Zanzibar's economy has long centered on fishing and the spice trade, but climate change and decades of mismanagement have left the agriculture and fishing industries weak. Tourism has become the main industry in the islands in recent decades and spurred some economic growth. But Zanzibar is an unequal society. Although unemployment is officially low, many young people struggle to find jobs. Even for those who are employed, most of the jobs don't pay enough. Nearly half of Zanzibaris live on less than $1 a day. As tourism grew, Zanzibar also set itself up as a tax-free port, making it a hub for regional shipping. With more foreigners and more shipping coming through, drug traffickers seized on the opportunity to build a new route to get drugs into Europe by way of East Africa. Heroin comes to Zanzibar from Pakistan, India, and Burma, hidden on huge container ships and smaller fishing boats, and stuffed in suitcases or swallowed by air passengers. The new drug trade on the island also became a way for Zanzibaris to make money. But for most, like Suleiman Mauli, the Sober House founder, heroin's arrival led to a life of addiction, begging, and stealing. Mauli wants to show me the places he used to hang out when he was using. He drives me to the shooting galleries where he used to get high. They're called ghettos in Swahili. The road is rutted and unpaved. Small, one-story limestone houses, the same color as the dusty streets, are jumbled together, packed in around narrow dirt paths.
And I used to be with a couple of my friends who are this area. They have ghettos. And some of them, they died. And some of them, they are clean now. And they no longer use drugs.
Mauli has broad shoulders and a big, toothy smile. He's clean-cut in khakis and a button-up shirt. He's fit and trim, vital and athletic, but he says when he was addicted to heroin, he looked unhealthy, strung out. He started using drugs for the same reasons a lot of kids do. They were easy to get, and lots of his friends used them. At 13, he was smoking pot. At 17, he started smoking heroin.
Since I started smoking heroin the first year, I tried to quit, but I was relapsing. I had many relapses.
Mauli spent the next 9 years on heroin. He stole from his family to buy drugs. They finally kicked him out of the house, and he lived on the streets. Eventually, he stopped smoking heroin and started shooting up.
I started injecting because you get high more than smoke. I injected myself. Then I found out that after I have to inject the same in order to get the same high.
Injecting heroin is more dangerous than smoking it. In Zanzibar, the overall HIV infection rates are relatively low compared to the rest of sub-Saharan Africa, less than 1%. However, a third of Zanzibaris who shoot heroin are HIV positive. But heroin addiction is hard to beat. In his old neighborhood, Mauli introduces me to Saidi Salaman. They used to do drugs together. Mauli is clean now, but Salaman is still using.
Hey, my friend.
Let's go.
Mauli waits by the car as I start to follow Salaman. He tells me that Salaman won't speak openly about his drug use if he's in the room.
Because if I'm there, they're going to talk the way I want them to talk. I don't want to dominate.
I see what you're saying.
Salaman shows me the room he shares with a friend, another addict. It's hot and dank.
Yes, my friend. Sit down, please.
Old foils and syringe wrappers are shoved into the corners. A small bed takes up most of the room. We sit down on the floor, and he tells me through a translator that he started using drugs the same way as Mauli. The drugs were around, and his friends were using them. But that was 20 years ago, and most of his friends from the old days have stopped using or died.
He said it was just part of life, you know, during the youth, the pressure of the youth, how to involve in drugs. So he just tried after seeing his friends are using drugs. So he tried. And later on, after seeing how good it is for that time being, he continued to use it. Even nowadays, is in the highest destruction, like a ruins destruction, ruin his life. But he has no choice. Getting drugs for him, getting heroin for him is difficult, and he has no job, so sometimes he has to steal.
He says that he feels stuck, abandoned and trapped by his addiction.
It's not like he wants to continue, because most of the young men around here, they're already in the sober house. It's only him. Yeah, him and others, because he needs some few money to pay for the sober house.
After I leave, Mali tells me he used to be as bad off as Salaman is now. Addicted, using more and more drugs and unable to afford the habit, cut off from his family and living only for the next hit.
Since I was starting smoking, I want to quit. I went to hospitals, to mentor, to rehab, then I was go back.
Until the first sober house was set up 3 years ago, Mali says there were no real treatment options in Zanzibar. Addicts were sent to the mental hospital or to the mosque to pray. Many ended up in prison and went through withdrawal there, but most went back to using when they got out. Mali says that detox was not enough. He needed treatment, which didn't exist in Zanzibar. Mali had to go to Kenya to get into a rehab program. When he was 26, his sister agreed to pay for him to go.
She said, because I'm tired of that, see how destructive you are, so I can pay. But I don't expect that you're going to change. I just want to get rid of you.
Mali spent 6 months in rehab. Eventually, sobriety stuck, and he started making plans.
And I didn't know how I would start, because I have nothing. I don't have skills. I don't have life skills. I don't have money. I was very poor.
But he was lucky. One of the rehab doctors in Kenya sponsored his education, so Mali went to college. He reconnected with his family. He spent the next couple of years going between Kenya and Zanzibar and started pushing for better programs for addicts on the island. In 2008, he got a call. The health ministry had a grant from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control to set up a new project to treat addiction, and they wanted Mali to be the coordinator.
It was a new program in Zanzibar.
The project was a peer-driven system, addicts helping addicts. It's a simple idea, and it's not actually new. Groups like Narcotics Anonymous have used it for decades. But there was nothing like Narcotics Anonymous in Zanzibar.
People, they've been trying to help addicts in different ways, and most of them were failed. But this was a different project because it's addicts that are the one who own this project.
At the end of the year, Mali set up a drop-in center, started doing outreach and running group meetings once a week. The center was the seed for what would eventually grow into Zanzibar's sober house movement.
You're listening to the documentary Getting Sober, Zanzibar's Struggle with Heroin Addiction. It's about how recovering heroin addicts in Zanzibar are banding together to show that there is life after addiction. This is Cross Currents from KLW News. I'm Holly Kernan. You can hear all of our stories and subscribe to our podcast at klw.org. And now back to reporter Chris Connolly.
This is one of the 9 sober houses Suleiman Mali helped create. It's in Rahaleo, outside the touristy Stonetown district and past Zanzibar's famous fish market. The mundane duties of life are meticulously scheduled and organized here. At 9 in the morning, one man washes clothes outside in a tub. A couple of the guys are stoking a small charcoal grill and making breakfast for the house, beans and garlic. The guys who don't have chores smoke cigarettes and squeeze against the wall outside to catch all of the available shade. After breakfast, the men will spend the rest of the day in group therapy, 12-step classes, and individual counseling sessions. They spend the entire day together because Mali realized that going through withdrawal, breaking addiction, that was tough enough. But doing it when you're homeless and surrounded by the friends you used to get high with was next to impossible. They needed a place to live while they got clean. The model is working. Since the first house opened in 2009, some 600 addicts have gone through the program. The 9 houses are run by community organizations.
Three room, yeah. Three bedroom and
The house is small. The men sleep five to a room. The bedrooms are barren except for ragged foam pads covered by old-looking sheets. They share one bathroom, use water from a pump outside to wash dishes and clothes. There's a small TV, a DVD player to watch movies, and a handful of lawn chairs.
This is a kitchen. Kitchen.
Suleiman Qasim quit using drugs 9 months ago. He was on heroin for 7 years and says that when he was using, he would cheat, beg, and steal to get money for drugs. He says he felt out of control.
I always found myself going back to the drugs, but I didn't know why. I would end up back at the drug dealers, but I didn't realize why I felt like I needed the drugs so much. But after I joined the sober house, I learned how addiction and relapse work. I know that relapse starts emotionally, then mentally, and then the last part is physical, the stage where I actually go get the drugs.
Now, Qasim is living with his parents because he can't afford the fee to live at the sober house. It costs about $70 a month. But he comes back every day, goes to the meetings, and hangs out with the guys here. He says it's keeping him clean.
I come here for the program because sometimes being alone is hard. When you face challenges outside and don't know what to do, it's better to get advice from your friends on how to handle the pressure. Otherwise, the feelings become too big to control.
This is our office.
Just counseling here on the door.
Huh?
Counseling.
This is counseling.
The sober house model is part rehab, part support group. A counselor comes in every day for a few hours for individual sessions, but instead of psychologists or doctors, the counselors are former addicts. Amin Hassan Shay is the counselor here. He got sober 3 years ago and says the toughest thing about life in the sober houses is the boredom and isolation. The residents aren't allowed to leave the property without a counselor. There are house rules, no fighting, no swearing, no sex, and no drugs. Shay says that helps keep tensions in check, most of the time.
We have 15 people here, sometimes more. It's such a small area that when conflict happens, it's just harder to deal with it. It depends how they wake up. Sometimes they fight. But when they fight, we don't chase them away. We just tell them not to do it again and to follow the rules.
Shay, like all of the counselors in Zanzibar's sober houses, is a volunteer. He's here 4 days a week and also volunteers doing outreach to addicts in the ghettos. He says it's his way of giving back. Every week, the house hosts an open meeting. This afternoon, a few neighbors drop by, and a handful of sisters and mothers of some of the guys here squeeze onto the ledge in the main room. Amin Shay leads the discussion. This week, they're talking about relapse. He tells the visitors that relapse is part of the cycle of addiction, but that they can help their sons and brothers stay sober. Many addicts feel alone and isolated when they leave the sober house, he says, so they should include them in family activities. Women are here for the community meeting, but only men live in this sober house. The vast majority of heroin addicts in Zanzibar are men, and there's only one sober house on the island for women. There's pressure in the sober house for the guys to not only get clean, but to be an example of recovery working. They want to show their community that addicts can change, that they can get better. But they face tough odds. A survey last year reported that nearly half went back to heroin after leaving the sober house. And even if they do stay clean, it's hard to find a job. Most have no skills, so they make a living selling fruit in markets or as day laborers.
Our community, recovery community, we want to do more things, but we have lack of resources.
That's Sober House founder Suleiman Mauli. He says it's still a struggle to keep the houses open. They rely on the fees that residents pay, but only a third actually pay the fees, and the cost of food and fuel is rising. Mauli says it's tough to keep the pantry stocked.
There is a lack of food in the houses, and we cannot support many people in the street. I think there is a need of doing more and more in order to to have a good result, you need to put more effort.
But there are signs of hope. This year, for the first time, the Zanzibar government is partially funding the sober houses, contributing 10 million shillings, or $6,000, which is more than any previous government, and it's enough to cover about half of a year's rent for each of the houses.
Top leaders of the government, after election, they just came to visit our house. That was big.
And, Mali says, people across the region are noticing the project's success. He's most hopeful that people in Zanzibar are finally able to see that addiction is not permanent. Back on the soccer field, the game is raucous as it comes to an end. The team from Rahaleo has won by one goal, but there are no sore losers here. Everyone seems to have enjoyed the day out. The former addicts pack up their jerseys, say their goodbyes, and clear out, heading back to the sober house. They have a 12-step class scheduled and chores to do. Their break from the monotony of life in the sober house is over. To the casual observer, the game was just a game. But for the men who played, it's a chance to show the world that there is life after addiction. In Zanzibar, I'm Christopher Connolly for Cross Currents.
You've been listening to a special edition of Cross Currents, the documentary Getting Sober, Zanzibar's Struggle with Heroin Addiction. Today's show was produced by Chris Connolly and engineered by Seth Samuel. Thanks also to Casey Miner for providing editorial guidance. And to translators Doto Minyadi, Faraji Saidi, and Suleiman Oman. And thanks to advisors Lydia Chavez, Martha Saavedra, David Tuller, and Cassandra Herman. And to David Ferry and Kevin Fixler for voiceovers. This documentary was made possible by funding from the Ford Foundation and the Africa Reporting Project at the UC Berkeley Graduate School of Journalism. Martina Castro is our managing editor. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. And thanks to you, we are listener-supported radio. And today we bid farewell to Chris Connolly, who has just received the coveted Kroc Fellowship. He'll spend the next year reporting for NPR. Congratulations, Chris.
Christopher Connolly, congratulations. Yay!
Tune into Cross Currents tomorrow at 5 for batting lessons.
Right, and allow the ball to come to you. Allow the ball to come to the swing. Don't go after the ball.
That's tomorrow at 5 on Cross Currents. The music you're hearing is by the San Francisco band Sang Matiz. That's a combination of French and Spanish for blood and harmonious mixture. They chose this name to reflect the diverse background of the group members. They have an afternoon show this Sunday at Rosenblum Cellars in Alameda beginning at 2 p.m. You can find all of that information along with more local news at our website. It's kalw.org. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan. Smaller than I can be. I know it's true. Oh, 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 oh. What happened?